Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. Here I'm joined by an interesting soul for snacks and sometimes full-blown banquets. We share conversation and confessions, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello, Super Beaks. In this episode, I'm hoovering with one of the most beguiling food writers I've ever read. It's the author of the frankly fucking glorious Small Fires, Rebecca May Johnson. It was recommended to me by a listener, this book, so thank you to that listener. It blew me away. The beauty, the detail, and the incredibly refreshing, powerful, original takes on the way we narrativize cooking and eating in Western culture. Before we get into it, though, I want to thank you for listening. You're loved and I'm deeply grateful. Want even more love and gratitude? Tell every twat you meet about the podcast. That'll do it. You'll have all my gratitude. Give it a 5-star review. I'll find even more gratitude. Subscribe to it. I will runneth over with gratitude. You can message us now, thehooveringpod@gmail.com, and you can text or WhatsApp voice note me. Our new number is 07-462-855-271. On a general level, I just want to know what you're eating. Send me your stories, show me your pictures that you want to share, whether they've brought you joy, misery, or anything else. You never know, you might eventually get a mention on the podcast. Keep an eye on the socials at The Hoovering Pod on Instagram and Twitter for specific topics and questions I'll be asking you over the coming months. If you are my patron, you are the lifeblood of this podcast, so thanks so much for your help. If you've got a few spare quid, literally that much is enough to get started. Head over, please, to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and see what you could be getting in exchange for your hard-earned money. All sorts, from guest recipes to videos or little sound clips of me enduring all the novelty items that my nearly wife and child are always filling my kitchen with. My stand-up show Wench has two solitary tour dates left in Salisbury on the 19th and Colchester on the 20th of November. So if they're not sold out, why don't you just come? Just come. Thanks. Tickets available via my website, jessicafostercue.com. It's Hoover time. Rebecca and I met in the studio and I made her my own hot red epic, which sounds like the sort of muck reserved for my OnlyFans usually, but you'll understand my meaning when we get into it. Okay, I'm going to do some really awkward brown nosing first, and then we can eat something. Yeah, okay. Sorry.
Everyone finds that hard to handle, don't they?
It's so grim. So your book, Small Fires, An Epic in the Kitchen, was recommended to me by a listener, and I'm still reading. I think it's the closest that reading about eating and feeding has made me feel to the feelings of eating and feeding, which is so powerful and vulnerable, and I think at times intimate, hugely emotional, and simultaneously simultaneously like mundane and routine. And it took me somewhere incredibly personal with you, I felt like, but with the lightest touch. So thank you for having written something so beautiful, which on a wild number of levels made me feel both sort of seen and also desperate to know you.
Oh, God.
And anyone like you and to cook, like to cook for you. And yeah, I want to be your friend. So, I don't know where to start. There's so many things I want to get into from the book. But we should probably start with Hot Red Epic. I've made a red sauce. Well, so the bit in your book about the Hot Red Epic, it's like the journey you've been on with a recipe for a red sauce, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's my attempt to make an account of cooking the same recipe 1,000 times over 10 years. And I'm kind of trying to make the big dick claim that that could be considered to be an epic.
Yeah.
On a par with the Odyssey. Yeah. Why not?
I love it. Why not? I've never thought of it consistently over a decade, but a red sauce is something that's come into my life often. Mm-hmm. And in my, I was about to say current relationship, which is very disrespectful to someone you're engaged to. But with my future wife, red sauce is one of the things that she has conceded, essentially, quite joyfully, that she'll never really bother making again.
Because you like making it.
I like making it.
And how do you make it?
I wonder if I should see if you can tell.
Oh, yeah, like a tasting.
Yes! Yeah. And so that bread, I need to read out what that bread is.
Shall I cut some bread?
Yes, please. Do you mind?
How do you like it? Like a slice?
Yeah,
however
you want to do it. It's called, it's a sour seeded porridge loaf.
Ooh.
Dense Moorish with lots of umami. Oh, they've said umami out loud.
It's nice and damp.
Is it damp?
In a pleasing way.
Great.
Like moist.
It features fermented porridge that's added to the dough and has distinctive nutty flavour derived from a selection of toasted seeds. Oh, it's got a list of seeds. We don't need to go into that. It's from a really nice deli in Heather Green called The Good Hope. But it's made by Paul Rhodes. To go with it, I've got oil or butter. Mm-hmm. And then I don't really know how to serve this. Just... I reckon there's some spoons and knives and forks and we'll just dollop things around.
And then chorizo.
Chorizo. And then there's tahini and Greek yogurt with some sesame seeds on top and a bit of honey on top and loads of lemon in it.
Delicious.
Okay, great. Go for your life. I feel like I've served it almost as a soup. I have got more bowly things if that's easier.
Did you blend it?
Yeah. Oh, God. That might be against the rules.
No rules.
Is there no rules?
I think everyone has their own, canon tomato sauce recipe. It's very intimate, isn't it? It's the first time we've met.
I know, but also that bit in your... The bit about, when you just see someone just going for it, it's like, yes! And it's so exciting that it is just more exciting when it's a woman doing that, I think.
Yeah.
You've been so trained to be so...
Yeah,
not to not do that. It feels transgressive.
You have to
just
train
to
yourself to just grab it.
Yeah,
and to not leave the last bit of food for someone who's somehow society's told you is more important. Than
totally, you've left me the seedy bum. Are you sure?
Are you okay? Do you
it's
want
my
that?
Absolute favourite.
Oh well, then that's lucky. I was going for a different bit.
I want to get in touch with Paul Rhodes because I'm really impressed with this bread as well.
It's really incredible bread.
He's done an absolutely smashing job.
I'm really enjoying the combination of tomato, tahini and chorizo.
Yay.
It's really nice. It's kind of reminding me as well of an otolengified shakshuka.
Yes.
You've got toppings and stuff.
Have you got background in cooking?
Not really. I mean, I did food technology GCSE. My mum's a great cook.
Great.
And it's her kind of space for... expressing herself.
Yes.
But I kind of mainly began cooking in earnest when I went to university.
Yeah.
And I just realised I thought I knew a lot more than I did.
Yeah. I feel like I look back at those sort of shared houses as students. Mm. And that, I was really reminded of it by parts of your book because there was a lot of creative expression. There was a lot of peacocking. There was a lot of flirting.
Yeah.
There was a lot of... it was the first time you're sort of really cooking to impress or attempting to.
Yeah.
I've done a few efforts, I think as a sort of teenager, but it had been, really copying, just sort of getting mum to show me how to make something and then doing it for three mates. And really it had been about getting hammered, it hadn't been about the food. Mm-hmm. Whereas you got to university, it's also still about drinking, but I've got really joyful memories of one friend's boyfriend in particular. effectively taken about 8 years to make a fucking bolognese. might as well been literally getting his dick out. It just took so long. Every time there'd be another ingredient.
Quite fun. I mean, it's quite relatable, that desire to keep adding things, see what happens.
Definitely.
But usually it makes things taste of less, which is a weird
thing.
I don't know.
Mm. Oh, God. Yes, please.
So you used onions?
Yeah. Do you think too many onions?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying eating it.
Okay, great. I'm enjoying eating it too, actually. It's sweeter than I haven't had it for a while, actually, you know, and it's sweeter than I thought. I don't think I'd have put onions in the tahini and yogurt again.
Do you use garlic?
Tiny bit.
Yeah.
Mm. But not in the yogurt. Because I think the chorizo is quite garlicky.
It's a great combination of things.
Yeah. Thanks. Really great. Nice. Really yum. I'm also enjoying my own food. Is that
giving yourself pleasure?
Just giving myself, 100% on my own podcast. What a weapon. So my red sauce has evolved through the years from super basic to like. I think there was a time where I had more time and I would do that thing of letting it bubble for a long old time and really sweating those onions for a lifetime on a low, low heat. And as time's gone on, I think it's become a more practical affair. But now I sort of use it as, this began with my ex, my son's dad, and then my son now, who actually is incredible. He's just turned 7 and he's incredible in the sense that he will try anything. And he'd be very open if he's not into it or whatever. And he's got really funny ways of describing things he is or isn't into, and food-wise.
I can imagine that adds a whole other dimension to food. I don't have a kid, but it seems very interesting and potentially quite fun.
Yeah, there is a lot of, he'll be like, that's nice, that tastes of the beach, or very good. Taste of February. You're like, what?
Amazing.
You're like, what are you on about? You know, absolutely bonkers.
And poetry.
It is. And he's like, you know, one of my favourites was in the lockdowns where he's a much sweeter tooth than me. And he got furious with having to have so many main courses and not just puddings. And he tried to reclassify pudding as sweet mains.
Oh, I love it.
To get more of it when he was 4, which was a touch, I think. But he, he will eat vegetables, but he won't enjoy them yet unless, sometimes he does. And then he'll flit in and out of love for different things. Don't we all? But like he also, I think, basically my red sauce has evolved, not just him, but because of his dad before him. To contain loads of secret vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
So that this red sauce, basically it's whatever I've got in.
Is that why you blitz it as well?
Yeah, it is why I blitz it.
Yeah. So what are secret vegetables are you feeding me?
This secret vegetables has got carrots, courgette and red pepper.
I thought I could taste pepper. How interesting. I feel like I've been like manipulated.
Sorry, I've gaslit you into sort of A to
day. I mean, I really like vegetables, but that's so interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like a technique that evolved out of feeding a child.
Yes, exactly. Well, I was going to say, actually, feeding a man who's in his 50s now.
Oh, right.
Who just didn't like vegetables enough. And a red sauce, I think, is a great place to...
it's a good disguise.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
To sneak them in. I suppose maybe let's get into the romanticism of cooking and eating, because you touch on that so brilliantly in your book.
Yeah.
I mean, we do love to... I mean, eating on telly... You rarely see anyone eat anything that they haven't had to pretend their grandmother first invented, do you?
Yeah, it feels like we lack in resources and ways of talking about cooking other than this sort of grandma chat.
Yeah.
That seems to come up on most TV shows.
Mm.
And this sort of... But it's a weird thing where often people seem to both revere and idealise the labour of the grandmother... But then also patronisingly undermine it in the same breath or in the same kind of gesture. Like often on MasterChef, it'll be like, oh, I'm cooking this, but I'm making it sophisticated or I'm or whatever. Or just that they're these sort of almost unreal people who didn't live complicated, difficult lives where maybe they also did very brave, crazy, difficult stuff and weren't just sort of there as a kind of almost like a natural resource, just providing these recipes. I don't know.
It's so true, isn't it? Yeah, and I think that thing is, it's not, you know, this idea that, I've been guilty of it on this podcast, of talking about food, like, was it made with love? I mean, the flip side is, I remember once cooking with, vicious PMT, and it did ruin it.
Yeah.
I followed the recipe exactly, yeah. And it was meant to be like butternut squash gnocchi, mm-hmm. and it just came out as a solid orb. It was rank. It was gluey. Inedible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. And I did the recipe, but filled it with rage.
So your performance was a rage performance of rage. Yeah, whilst cooking.
Yeah. And sort of fed it to my divorced parents as well. Oh, and what was meant to be, you know, quite a lovely, rare, we're all having dinner together.
A monstrous ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. A gluey ball of family.
Just so fitting. Yeah, awful.
Yeah, I think, I feel like the word lovely.
Yeah.
Just, there's just so many, I guess, techniques that people have that somehow undermine all the stuff that's going on when you cook.
Yes.
Like rage and bad feeling and... I guess when I was writing the book, I mean, there's plenty of space. I don't want to deny the fact of joy and deliciousness and loveliness in food, but that's not all there is to it.
Mm.
And I guess I wanted to, you know, make an account of it that incorporated those things. A few people at events that I've done, they've really alighted upon that, especially women in their 50s,
mm-hmm.
to say that they felt that I was inside their head.
Wow.
Because they've been... There was a woman at an event I did a few weeks ago. She works in food and people always talk to her in this very patronising way about what she does. And she said she felt like suddenly she had a way of being angry about it, like expressing, you know, fuck off, it's not just lovely. You know?
I love it. I think there's that's a sign of an extraordinarily brilliant book as well. Yeah. It's that I think people are going to take... I felt seen in other ways, the neediness.
Yeah.
And then also this like, oh God, it is a massive creative expression.
Mm. Yeah. And actually, I should have brought it with me. But about 2 months ago, a friend sent me a book that Sheba, the feminist publisher, published in 1987, which is a feminist cooking book called Turning the Tables, like Recipes and Reflections from Women.
Wow.
It's absolutely an amazing political book with recipes in it. And there's a whole section of the book on ambivalence. And I just love that. Like, it's a recipe book that makes space for ambivalence and difficult feelings and the refusal of cooking.
Yeah.
And nonetheless, yes. They give recipes. So, you know, there's contributors from all over the world. Many of them are involved in activism or and have migrated. Or so there's like the Chinese lesbian group
mm-hmm.
who say we're strong in our anti-racism. And here is a recipe for steamed sea bass with ginger and spring onions. And so it's kind of binding politics and cooking together and also the full kind of emotional spectrum that cooking and eating comes with. So there were a few people there who grew up in the book who grew up in poverty, so there's lots of sort of trauma around scarcity from childhood. And nonetheless you still have to eat, so they contribute their recipes. So
yeah.
It's an amazing, you know, I don't know if it's sort of an algorithm thing that we live in now where often we're not receiving complex impressions of the world necessarily. Yeah. And I reading this book from the 80s where there's a real good, you know, pleasure and anger and rage and difficulty and recipes together. And I just felt it was so exciting to read that.
Glorious, yeah.
And I made Angela Carter's recipe for potato soup. Great. You're like, oh, Angela Carter, potato soup recipe. Great.
Amazing.
I know it's a really good recipe, actually. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I feel like I've gone a really long tangent there. But I was just trying to kind of address that nostalgia, romanticism around cooking. And
well, it's also, there's a functionality to it. You know, you can't do without it. And I think it's one of the things that makes eating so complicated. And I think why I wanted to do a podcast about eating as opposed to food. One of the many reasons, there's enough noise in the world about food. But I think with eating, wherever you're at with it, you can't stop.
Mm-mm.
So
you'll die.
You will. You'll perish. So you have to have a relationship with it.
Yeah.
And it won't always be the same one. And there are going to be times where, for whatever reason, it's more functional, times where it's more joyful.
Yeah.
Just the practicality of it, you know. Yeah. The sort of burns and the cuts and the sweat. No one ever talks about
it's work.
Sweat. Yeah, it's graft.
It's work.
And sometimes you're not tasting the love, you're tasting the grind, right?
And maybe work that hasn't really been, in some level, consented to.
Yeah.
But it's been performed out of some sense of duty or social expectation. And that's why I only go briefly into it in the book, but mentioning Sylvia Federici, who wrote Wages for Housework, she was part of a group that wrote Wages for Housework in the 70s, where she identifies that love is work that conceals work. It's part of the performance.
Yeah.
You know, gendered labour in the house, especially. And I just, it's really, it felt really important for me to disentangle all those things, so that you, to think about how to cook on one's own terms and or refuse aspects of the labour that you don't want to perform.
Mm.
You know, I've seen mothers around me and sometimes my own mother, sometimes doing work that...
Yeah. It's fucking annoying. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, and it's not always perceived because it's seen as love.
Yeah.
It's not always perceived as difficult, tiring work.
Well, it's so easy to get it. I mean, there are difficult, tiring work, 100%. And then there's also, it also opens, and it's something you must feed your kid. Mm-hmm. I have a strong desire to feed my kid, mm-hmm. but I also watch myself through feeding my kid and eating with my kid, mm-hmm. repeating the mistakes of my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, I watch my dad's family fed with a really complicated, that is a real language of, it's one of the very few ways of loving mm-hmm. that my dad has and that his mum had mm-hmm. before him. Really very few ways, but it's really on the nose. Like yeah. if you have an argument the next day, he'll just give you sort of carry a bag of ready meals.
Mm-hmm.
It's that on the nose. It's that obvious. But that came with a real hatred of fatness and greed, and it was like, well, it's fucking confusing. It was impossible to navigate that as a child. That massively fat phobic, but also quite obsessed with making sure you know that you must receive their love. You had to receive it, otherwise you were being really upsetting them. And I, not the fat phobia, thank God. I mean, at least I've evolved out of half of it. But I watch myself wanting mm-hmm. too much my son to love what I've mm-hmm. made him in a way that I don't think I do with. Mm-hmm. adults, but with partners sometimes as well, there's this bit of me that's mm-hmm. like, I know, I can see it needing mm-hmm. too much. It's like, it's fine for them not
and
to like that.
Maybe he loves you without the food.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
hard to accept.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, he's really into eating. I know I've done that. But it's like, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess with young kids, you know, literally they need that to survive.
Yeah.
But right towards the end of the book, because I definitely use food as a way of mediating relationships,
mm-hmm.
you know, communicating with people, seeking love and validation through mm-hmm. cooking for all the many people I've lived with, kind of create this sort of drama and pressure on the cooking sometimes.
Yeah.
And then when a friend came round and she's like, the food is really great and everything, but I've come to see you, I'd happily eat chips.
Yeah.
And I it made me cry, actually. Like, I couldn't really accept it.
Yeah.
And I feel that brought about a huge revelation. Yeah, I guess maybe that's to do with self-esteem. It's to do with all sorts of things, stuff inherited from parents. And mm-hmm. as you were talking about seeing that, the role that it has as a sort of vector of love.
Yeah.
And then disentangling yourself from that and maybe thinking, oh, maybe I'm good enough, even if I don't cook. Maybe I'm still a person. I don't know. But I felt like that was a substitute for me for a while for other forms of interaction and communication. I sort of held the food in between me and other people.
Wow, what a beautiful way of putting it, yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I don't know if you've got this. I've got a few cursed friends who every time I try and feed them, I fuck it up in some way.
Oh.
One of them's a former guest, my friend Hattie Ashdown, a comedian, yeah. and I made her a soup that tasted nothing. I've made her like a white fish, and it was an Ottolenghi recipe actually, but I made it was too spicy for her. inedibly spicy for her.
Yeah.
I've fucked up every single time on some level.
Did you ask her first before you made it if she could eat hot food?
No.
Yeah. I mean, it's... No. I'm not trying to, like, shame
you. No,
her.
I love it, really.
But I think...
Of course I didn't. Of course I forgot to do that.
You know, I grew up in a rural area and I never met a vegetarian until I moved to London.
Oh, wow. Where did you grow up? In Norfolk?
In Suffolk.
And Suffolk.
In Suffolk. Lovely. Yeah. I don't think I also ever drank herbal tea until I came to London.
Well, I would, yeah. But yeah, on,
and now,
now
I've got a whole, you know, range of teas. Mm-hmm. I was like, I was just being, you know, as a bit of a brat. I was like, oh, people think they're so interesting drinking mint tea. And it's like, yeah, people can drink mint tea. It's fine. Get over yourself. Asshole. Now I'm a drinker of mint tea. But yeah, I think, you know, moving house so many times, I think 15 times in 10 years as a, you know, as a student for a really long time because I did a PhD. I guess, because I like to cook for people and that was my sort of slightly dysfunctional way of getting to know everyone I lived with. But that became the way that I found out about difference. Mm-hmm. You know, I set out thinking in a slightly, I guess, excited and confident way as an 18, 19 year old, I'll just make the best thing I can and, you know, that will be fine. But obviously everyone has a very different relationship with food and eating and often traumatized or, you know, shaped by their life. It's completely individual. And so I eventually, you know, gradually realized that I should actually like listen to people and you know, find out about them when I was cooking for them. And yeah, and friends who have had difficulties with eating and eating disorders and cooking for them and wanting to make food that was safe for them.
That's really interesting.
Was really important. And I just remember even working in restaurants or just lots of kind of casual attitudes, kind of columnists and papers being like, oh, I don't know, people who are celiacs are just trying to get attention. Or the sort of general vibe of like, and it's definitely misogynist in its sort of, in its emphasis, like, people being sort of difficult or attention seeking by not eating gluten or, I don't know, various things. And then thinking about actually how violent it is to ask someone to eat something that they can't eat or causes them pain or trauma.
Yeah.
And like, why would you, you know, you ask, it's very, you're putting things into your body. And if you feel uncomfortable with that, it's incredibly violating.
Yeah. Do you think you eat differently at different times of the year?
I have an allotment, although it's much neglected. So I like a lot of tomatoes in the summer. I guess I associate the summer with tomatoes late summer, early autumn.
Yeah.
And I'm very into bitter greens, Italian bitter greens.
Cavolo Nero.
Yeah, that
is that an Italian bitter green?
Yeah, that is Italian black kale, isn't it?
Or do you mean like chicory?
Yes, exactly. That's what I really mean.
That's what you really mean. So what you really mean.
But I guess, you know, there is a bitterness to Cavolo Nero as well, so I didn't want to exclude that. I can't really say it in a very convincing way, but there's puntarelle.
I'm convinced.
Puntarelle is in English, it's also referred to as asparagus chicory. Actually, I think that's a slightly archaic, but that's in, I think, maybe Jane Grigson's book of vegetables, she calls it that. But there's a really nice, it's like a giant, looks like a, when you grow it, like a giant tall, maybe lettuce type thing. And then in the middle, there's a core hub of like asparagus type spears.
Yeah.
That are kind of blanched, so they're white by the darkness of the leaves around them. And then there's this...
Wow, like the creatures in The Descent.
I haven't seen that, but...
They're
blanched like little white
because they've been in a cave.
Gone,
yes.
Or like white asparagus, which they grow in the dark.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway, and there's a great thing you can do with that. You pick the stalk, white stalk things, and you put them through a kind of metal grid, which shreds it. Anyway, then you make a very potent dressing with anchovy and garlic and olive oil and with like if you want parmesan or whatever.
Perfect.
That's typically Roman.
Right.
So that would be puntarelle alla puntarelle alla romana. Anyway, Roman style, but it's incredibly delicious. But anyway, That's actually slightly harder to grow. But the one, because it requires quite a lot of manure, but to really get for the asparagus-y bits to form.
Yeah.
But, sorry, I'm just getting really excited.
No, I'm really into it. So you're trying to do that in your allotment?
I did grow that in my allotment.
Shut the front door by yourself.
And it's really expensive to buy in the shops, or basically impossible, but it's actually not that hard to grow. And but there's another one called Cicoria, which if you're in Rome in the winter, it's just everywhere, like every supermarket, you tend to buy it already cooked, or every restaurant everywhere has it. Mm. And they cook it twice. They blanch it in salty water and then they fry it in oil and chili.
Mm.
And it's so good. And slugs aren't interested.
Yeah.
And
great.
So
for growing
you
here,
just
then.
Have it all winter. And it's perennial, so it comes back.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
So, yeah, I absolutely love that. So, that's something I associate with winter.
That's funny, isn't it?
So, and it's nice to think of joy in winter food. You know, food joy in winter.
You've made me think of like Devon smells of garlic in all through May. Because of wild garlic is everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
I filmed something in a May once in Devon, and I have an aunt and uncle that live in a very like wild middle of nowhere bit of Devon. And it does, like, if you open the car door as you're just driving around, it's like constant garlic.
Really fragrant.
Yeah. Is there anything that you believe demands to be eaten in a ritualistic way?
I'm quite curious about how other people's rituals, actually.
Yeah.
So if someone eats something in a different way to me, I'm often quite intrigued to try how they do it, to see how it feels. It's like doing an experiment on your own body, you know, sort of, oh, this is how you get pleasure. I'll give it a go. I enjoy that.
It's so true. That's so true.
I think that's how, and that's how I learned about how to eat loads of stuff, you know, as an adult. It can be very, it's almost like a recipe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Different methods of eating things can be very revealing. I don't know if I've yet tried Nigella's double buttering.
Oof. What's that?
Well, it was on her last series, I think, Cook, Eat, Repeat, where there's an initial...
Just the words double buttering.
Yeah.
Should have gone viral, not microwave.
There's an initial buttering that soaks into the bread.
Okay.
And then there's a secondary buttering that sits more
on
the bread.
Is this toasted bread?
Toasted
bread, yeah. You've got to have the initial buttering, but I didn't know you could do a
And then the second buttering to really engage your teeth.
I want to try it. The buttering... Marmite, then the second buttering.
Oh, yes.
My in a doddery moment, my nana as a child once put the Marmite on before the butter.
Yeah.
On some toast, some after school toast. And that was the only way I'd then have it for about 5 years.
You see, that's interesting. That's the kind of thing I'd be interested in trying out.
Yeah. Marmite, then butter.
Yeah.
Well, this is the joy of this podcast, is that people often give me examples. I've ended up having marmalade and gouda on a crumpet.
Oh, I could see that. I like marmalade and bacon, I think, is quite classic. If you fry your toast in bacon fat after you've fried the bacon.
Oh, fuck on. Oh, my God.
And then you can have a buttering if you want, but then to add marmalade is very good.
Oh, God.
So, you know, it's like a treat because it's usually... If you use streaky bacon, it renders quite a lot of fat, doesn't it? And then fry your bread in that.
Smoky. It sort of smokes.
Yeah, exactly. And then, can just go straight with marmalade or have butter as well.
Fucking hell. Okay, well, that's getting tried.
Okay, wait, I've got a ritual.
Oh, yeah, I'm ready for I'm here for
I'm,
it.
I'm very into trays. Eating on a tray.
Yes.
So since lockdown, me and my partner eat breakfast in bed every day.
Fuck, this is living.
Yeah.
This is life. This
it's like
is living.
Refusal
now.
To participate in work. I mean, kind of stealing as much of the day as you can to just be a person and listen to the radio or talk about stuff. And so we take it in turns to do breakfast in bed, and we can get very elaborate with it as well. Just, you know, complicated breakfast sandwiches. This morning was paratha with bacon and tamarind sauce and then coffee.
Wow. That's incredible. That's
nice.
Like a dish you... That's... Oh, my God.
Well, it's actually really great frozen parathas that you can get.
I love them.
Yeah.
Well, you just dry fry them.
Yeah, exactly.
I know exactly what you mean. Do you know what? You can get them in Catford Post Office.
Wow.
You can often get like 2 packs of 8 for £2.50.
That's a bargain.
Yeah. Anybody in South East London listening, get on down there.
Because sometimes I have honey and butter in paratha is nice.
The list of things
to
try
flaky,
grows.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, the oily though. Mm. I love the oily business.
It's
so good, isn't it? Unctuous, I'm going to say out loud. Quick fire questions. Weirdest thing you ever ate?
The first time I tried frog's legs.
Yeah. How did you find them?
I actually found them a bit like chicken.
Yeah.
Like, it was, they were seasoned really nicely. It was in a Vietnamese restaurant. I was 18 with my friend who was reviewing Vietnamese restaurants for Time Out. And she took me there and we had them, and I'd never had them before. So my mind was filled with, you know, the images of green skinned frogs, but they were quite delicate and chickeny.
Did they have a tiny bone in?
A little bone.
Yeah, a little bone. 5 second rule, yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah, great. No other option. Would you eat a person?
No.
Oh, quick answer. And I don't know why, but I'm surprised.
Oh. I don't know. I've got in my head the film The Cook, The Thief, The Wife and His Lover. Have
okay,
you seen that?
Yeah, no, but I'm very scared of cannibal-y films. Yeah. Is it a cannibal-y film?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you do get to see Helen Mirren in Jean-Paul Gaultier's Corsetry.
Okay, so, okay, we'll watch it then, even if I have to watch someone eat her up.
Okay, she doesn't get eaten.
Oh,
it's,
great.
It's a feminist revenge film.
Oh, okay, well then, I'm absolutely fucking watching it, even if I have 3 years of nightmares. Hangover, what you have in?
Have you been to Bake Street?
No.
Oh, my God. You have to go to Bake Street restaurant in London. It's very close to here. I'm just sort of gesturing in a direction in the studio, which is pointing to the wall. But it's this guy called Ferrell's restaurant, and he's an absolute genius of comfort food.
Ooh.
Like, oh, my God. There's like four types of chicken burger, normal burgers. He makes his own ice creams. He makes little samosas. I had his food when I was really hungover, and it's extremely good coffee as well.
Oof.
It's near Rectory Road Station.
Okay.
You have to go to Bake Street.
Oh
my God, they make creme brulee
there.
Cookies. It's a 3-day process.
Shut
creme brulee cookies.
Oh God.
Also really fun, probably with kids. You can sit outside. It's very casual and relaxed and nonsensey place, but just exquisite.
Fuck, okay, great. Yeah.
The creme brulee cookies sell out, so you have to make sure you get there in reasonable time.
Okay, well, I promise to go.
It's a literal creme brulee on a cookie. It's just like...
Would you get to crack the roof?
Yeah, it's nuts.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, I'm going to go there.
Now it's time for the Fifth Men Question.
A few weeks ago on Any Questions, a wildly posh old lady called Olivia phoned in and described the ex-Prime Minister Liz Truss as all fart, no shit, and was the first caller in years to be kicked off live on air for swearing. And as funny as it was, it caused a tiny rip in the fabric of our universe, which allowed Minecraft to become an actual reality. It's a disaster, Rebecca. No one can even recognise a cow, let alone their own children, and the curveless hellscape quickly descends into a deadly apocalypse. It's agreed the universe to go back to reality, but only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, agree to carry a deer from Swindon to Norwich whilst the whole way reading aloud from the entire collection, one after another, of every single book that R.L. Stine has ever written, so your mouse is too busy at any point for snacks. It sounds impossible, but you do it! You're a hero.
Yeah.
You've saved us all from that terrible apocalypse sparked by Olivia on Radio 4. Your reward is the adulation of all people for all time, but your reward in the moment, and bearing in mind you're flipping hungry because you've just done all that blooming carrying and no snacks, and it's the feast of your dreams. This is the opposite of a last meal because you couldn't be happier and you couldn't be hungrier.
Yeah.
I want you to be wherever you want to be to have this meal, probably in bed with a partner in the morning on a tray. Where would you have this feast? You can tell me that, but I just want to know the feast. It's a fancy feast. I couldn't care less about any consequences of anything that comes up in this in terms of like health or ethics. I just want to know if you were the happiest and those horrible
people.
Confines. If you're the happiest and hungriest, you can imagine being, what would you have to eat and drink? I also want to acknowledge that this is only your answer now. And if I'd asked you this in half an hour's time, you could have given a different answer, I'm sure.
I've got two meals that have immediately come to mind. One is very brief and one is slightly more long-winded.
Let's go.
The instant answer is fish and chips.
Yeah.
Nothing for me is more alluring than the smell of vinegar and salt in paper in fish and chips.
Oh, I had an emotion and a physiological reaction.
Yeah, I think when you're really hungry, when you want to eat in a complete frenzy.
I'm fucking full right now, then. It still just made my mouth cry.
And where I live, they cook it in beef dripping. And chips cooked in beef dripping is a religious experience.
I've only ever had that in Durham.
Oh, well, come to Harwich in Essex. The other thing would be a restaurant in Testaccio in Rome, where my friend Rachel Roddy lives, who's a food writer.
Yes, amazing.
Oh, fuck, I've forgotten the name, even though I've been there loads of times. Anyway, some of the most joyful meals of my life I've ever had there. And they have like this amazing dish. Actually, it's also fish, which is salt cod with prunes, with preserved fruit and onion. So you've got this sort of salt, sweet and onion. And it was a religious, almost wept eating it. It was so good. And then they also have lots of like weeds that they cook,
ooh,
like mallow, you know, like, and like dandelion type things. And they'll just cook whatever wild weeds are in season.
Glorious.
Every day. And it's just really amazing.
Fucking yeah. Great.
But it's not kind of, it's not a stressful place to eat. You know, you yeah. can just spend ages eating more and more. Yeah.
Yes, please.
So that, yeah, so that's my instant thought.
Oh, it's just brilliant.
Thanks
thank you
lot.
So much
thanks
for doing
for having
this.
Me. This thank is fun. You. And thanks for feeding me lunch.
My pleasure. Thanks for doing it. Splendid.
Hoovering Podcast.
What a beautiful episode. I implore you to read Rebecca's work and please, genuinely please, get your mitts on her book Small Fires, An Epic in the Kitchen. I'm getting it for more than one person's Christmas gift. It's so rich with glorious thought and feeling. Rebecca's people, if she has any, didn't approach me asking me to have her on the podcast. I'm not under any social or professional duress to say that I like this book. I independently absolutely loved this book and I really want you to enjoy it too. Follow her on Instagram at Rebecca May Johnson. Come and see my last tour dates of Wench in Salisbury on the 19th or Colchester on the 20th of November. Tickets available on my website, jessicafosterq.com. Follow us on social media at The Hoovering Pod. I'm on at Jessica Foster Q. Send us voice notes, pictures, WhatsApps to 07462 855 271. Email us, thehooveringpod@gmail.com. I'll be storing all your beautiful offerings up and discussing them in future episodes. Keep an eye on our social media for any specific questions and topics that we'll be asking you to contact us about. Links to everything interesting mentioned today are, as ever, in the podcast notes. Hoovering is presented and created by me, Jessica Foster Q. The music is by Jake Yap, and it was produced by Laura Grimshaw. Until in 2 weeks, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.